This is the Todd Wright Toddcast. It is presented by Brandon Legal Group. They are your full service law firm, so you need not ask what type of law Brandon Legal Group specializes in to call them for a free consult. Full service. And you do not need to live, nor work, nor have your legal issue originate within the city limits of Brandon, Florida, to get a free consult from Brandon Legal Group. 844-4-BLG-4ME. 844-4-BLG-4ME. Or visit BrandonLegalGroup.com. Multi-year supporters of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments, the Brandon Legal Group foursome is team number one on my tee sheet at every Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournament. I thank them for their support. And just remind you that when you are in need of legal assistance, they are your full-service law firm. BrandonLegalGroup.com, 844-4-BLG-4ME. Pin Chasers is also a longtime supporter of Todd Wright Tour Golf Tournaments, and I've been telling you about various specials, birthday parties, group outings, league play, and other special events at the three Pin Chasers locations for a while now on the podcast. They have late night specials pretty much every night except Friday and Saturday. I think you can understand why they don't need to do late night specials on Friday and Saturday. The Breakfast Bowl is 7 days a week, and they are quite a destination for group outings. I know. I have taken the group from Brandon Legal Group there on a weekday afternoon. I have taken the group from the Identity Tampa Bay, where I do my What Are the Odds podcast for some holiday afternoon fun back in December. Just follow them on Facebook, and you'll get so many ideas of the specials and opportunities that are out there at Pin Chasers at all three locations, 4847 North Armenia, 5555 West Hillsborough, and even out in Zephyr Hills at 6816 Gale Boulevard. You add it up, it's 122 lanes. There is arcade and, most importantly, air hockey available at all locations. Great special on Tuesday night is the late night, 9 p.m. to close. Unlimited pizza, unlimited bowling, $10.99. Not for both, just $10.99. And you can bowl and eat pizza until close. Just an example of the late night specials at Pin Chasers. Visit pinchasers.net or follow them on Facebook. Again, my email for those of you that listen to the Toddcast is write.todd@yahoo.com. I thank Sean, a regular listener of mine for many years, for reaching out via email to offer his thoughts on the Tennessee Titans. His accurate thoughts on the Tennessee Titans. We both shared the feeling, as a number of you did, based on their play the last couple months of the season, that this wasn't going to be the New England Patriots year. Sean, unlike me, just had it right 1 week earlier than I did with Tennessee's victory. And I'm going to talk about the Titans here coming up. I wanted to review some coaching moves in this edition of the Toddcast and had been waiting to do that. However, I'm also sensitive to the fact that I don't want to give you a Toddcast on coaching moves and then it is immediately dated by other coaching moves or a ripple effect relating to a move that I talked about. So based on the fact, as I record this at roughly 12 noon on Tuesday, that there are some things happening with multiple head coaching openings in the National Football League beyond just the news from Monday that the Dallas Cowboys will hire former Super Bowl winning coach Mike McCarthy, previously of the Green Bay Packers. I will wait a little bit until some things settle down, shake out in regards to multiple teams looking for head coaches before doing a head coach addition. So let me review NFL first round playoff action. Again, if you don't understand why I refuse to call it the wild card round, it's because I believe it's a misnomer Every home team is a division champion, not a wild card. The NFL does it for branding purposes. I just think it's an insult to the division champs. That said, some division champs insulted their fan bases with their performance in the wild card round in losing to the wild cards, namely New England, New Orleans, and to a lesser extent, Philadelphia in what Vegas even had as an even game, inaccurately, but even Vegas did not favor the Eagles, although they opened the Eagles as a modest one-point choice early last week. In order of the games being played, I don't know, was it just me? But when Buffalo kicked those field goals and went up 16-0, I didn't think that the lead was insurmountable, even though I liked the Bills in the game and still believe they were the better team. I thought of Ohio State kicking too many field goals and how they blew a 16-0 lead to Clemson. And someone even made the connection that both 16-0 deficits the last couple weeks have been overcome by the last two Clemson quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. I don't get credit for that observation. Nope, that was made by somebody else that I just was scrolling through on social media. I do think there's a common question, and I don't like it, but it exists in the sports world after games. Did one team win it or the other team lose it, when the truth is both? I do buy into the theory that Buffalo did plenty to lose this game. It wouldn't have taken much more for them to build a bigger lead, make it insurmountable, and finish the job. They looked very bad as Houston came back from 16 points down, even though they forced overtime. They just did not look like a team that was ready to win at this level. And that goes from the quarterback to the defense, missing obvious assignments, missing blatant tackles, especially on the big play that ultimately set up the game-winning field goal in overtime. And the coaching decisions were very, very questionable as well. An unfortunate end to an otherwise really solid season for the Buffalo Bills. From Houston's standpoint, I'll get to Tennessee. Deshaun Watson was the better quarterback. Better quarterbacks often win games like this. He showcased it at the right time with his overall performance, not just on the play that ultimately set up the game-winning field goal. The presence of Watson on offense, the presence and return of J.J. Watt on defense, and their intangibles contribute significantly to the fact that the Texans were even competitive in this game, let alone going on to win it. Also, the adjustment that, while I don't think Houston overall did a great coaching job, especially with some of the decisions that were made down the stretch by Bill O'Brien and his staff, the fact that they did figure out a way to get DeAndre Hopkins involved once down 16-0. The matchup of DeAndre Hopkins versus Tre'Davious White actually went a long way to determining who won the game. When Tre'Davious White was dominating that matchup, the Bills were winning the game. Once the Texans, coaching staff, play calling, and Watson figured out a way to free up Hopkins against White, the Texans were then in a position to win the football game. So I think more than anything else, that individual matchup of two of the best at their position in the National Football League dictated who was better in the game. When White had the better of the matchup, the Bills looked like the winning team. In the end, Hopkins got the better of the matchup since we played 60-plus minutes, and the Texans were the better team in that stretch of the game. Moving on to Tennessee and New England, again, the limitations on New England's offense, their inability to simply make plays and give up the plays that they normally make were on display on Saturday night in Foxborough. Just things that for the better part of at least 5, if not 10 years, we had not seen in a New England Patriots game or regularly in a Patriots game were on display. They had no answer for Derrick Henry. The strength of the Patriots all year had been their defense. Perhaps this unit just wore down in recent weeks. Too many three and outs, too many short fields, and could not stop Derrick Henry. Sure, I'll give Ryan Tannehill credit for winning his first NFL playoff start and what he has done as quarterback of the Titans, but he threw for 72 yards. 72. Which kind of adds insult to the Patriots' exit that the opposing quarterback threw for 72 yards. I mean, A.J. Brown was not a factor in this game. That is a credit to the Patriots' secondary. But clearly, Mike Vrabel had a game plan. He felt he could win the battles at the line of scrimmage, and Derrick Henry could win those battles. And I have been saying on the Fantasy Football Podcast ever since Derrick Henry entered the NFL that I didn't understand why, if the Titans were going to draft him, why they weren't going to give him a full workload. Finally, they did this season, and here they are in the divisional round of the playoffs. Now, they were here 2 years ago after Derrick Henry, with a little help from Marcus Mariota and a lot of help from the Titans defense, came back from a big deficit at Kansas City in the first round of the playoffs. But this team just feels and looks different. I'm not saying they're going to win in the next round. I just think this Titans team is better than the Titans team 2 years ago. While again, Derrick Henry is a huge factor in them winning both a playoff game 2 years ago and the playoff game against New England the other night. As it relates to New England and how limited they were offensively, just even some things like Julian Edelman dropping a key pass that would have kept a drive alive that ended after, what, one or maybe two first downs. The volume was there for Sony Michel. The big runs were not. That was too common a theme all season long with Michel, whether it was the inability of the offensive line to create openings for Michel or just the fact that Michel did not advance on what was a solid first year in the NFL the way Nick Chubb has, who also was at Georgia at the same time as Sony Michel. New England has more questions than ever about where they go from here. Looks like, and we'll do a podcast on this, they're going to lose one assistant coach. They may lose multiple assistant coaches. Granted, they lost one last year, went to Miami. Maybe more than just that one. Patricia left the previous year. The biggest question is, of course, on Tom Brady. But the better team won on Saturday night. And the better team the last 2 months won on Saturday night. That being the Titans ending the most recent run of postseason success by the New England Patriots. On to the early game on Sunday. And I'll just say this about the Saints. And yeah, I mean, now I have no skin in the game as a Cowboys fan in these playoffs, but I was rooting for the Saints. A little part of me was rooting for them since the no defensive pass interference call late in the game against the Rams last year in the NFC title game that ultimately likely would have produced a Saints win in the NFC title game and a much different feel to what was probably one of the three or four worst Super Bowls in history. That said, Saints fans need to let it go. Look, I get it from 2 years ago on the Minneapolis Miracle. I get how heartbreaking that was, how that should have never happened, how that wasn't on the refs, how that was on a rookie defensive back and the rest of the secondary for not simply surrounding Stephon Diggs and making a tackle or just holding him upright so he can't just run free into the end zone. I get that that's heartbreaking. Then last year, I agree. So does the league. The only reason why we had pass interference via review this year was because of the missed call at the end of the NFC Championship game. But you don't get that now. You don't. Could it have been pass interference on the game-winning score? Yeah, it could have. But you know what? It's not like 2 years ago. It's not like last year. You lost. Your team underperformed. And we saw this in a loss to the San Francisco 49ers in a shootout. And just in key spots this year, despite them being a 13-win team, and namely on Sunday, it was pretty obvious as early as the second quarter, the Saints didn't have it. And that's on them. And if you're going to complain about defending a fade route to a great red zone target in Kyle Rudolph in coverage by a DB who's clearly physically and otherwise inferior to Rudolph on that play, give me an explanation for why Adam Thielen was allowed to go right down the hash marks to catch a long touchdown to even set up that play in the first place. Lattimore going out due to injury was a factor on that final drive. But overall, the Saints played poorly in that football game. It was another game that Alvin Kamara proved he is not a number one running back. Some criticized the Patriots and said the key to exposing their how they were flawed in recent weeks was how they were doing so much on gadget plays to cover for the fact that they couldn't just line up 11 on 11 and beat you straight up. The Saints did the same thing to keep up with the Vikings on Sunday, and his name was Taysom Hill. That's not enough. That doesn't cover for Drew Brees having a bad game, Kamara again not being able to move the sticks as a number one running back. Defensively, the Saints not doing enough as a group to slow the Minnesota Vikings, who looked like the more efficient offense, much like the Texans got DeAndre Hopkins going when they needed to in the second half of the game. The Vikings got Stephon Diggs going in the second half of that game. Vikings deserve to win the game. And I don't want to hear any Saints fans complaining about a pass interference at the end of the game because there were so many other blatant examples of the fact that you didn't deserve to win that game. And if the previous 2 years didn't happen the way they did, I don't know that you'd be saying a word about that overtime touchdown. You don't get it this time. You blew it. And as far as Seahawks and Eagles, both teams walking wounded, predictably to me, and I didn't have a lot right this last weekend other than two things in the Seattle-Philadelphia game. One, I felt the under was a very strong play in that game. And I also felt from a fantasy perspective that DK Metcalf would be a very good play in DFS. Both of those things did happen. Carson Wentz now, and I have good friends who are Eagles fans, and they're just shaking their head at this point because what are you going to do here? The team has already decided and put their money where their mouth was, that Wentz, not Foles, was the quarterback to continue leading this team. And at this point, that decision looks like a mistake. And it's not for any other reason that Foles won postseason games and Wentz can't play them. You know, this reminds me a little bit, for those of you who are hockey fans or live in the Tampa Bay area, if Ben Bishop had been healthy enough to play regularly in postseason games. What might have been different with the Lightning organization and ultimately what they decided in who they ultimately chose to be their goaltender going forward. If you haven't noticed, namely from watching the Winter Classic, Ben Bishop is doing quite well in Dallas, but he's healthy. He's also playing for a head coach who was elevated to that position after Jim Montgomery stepped down slash was relieved of his duties for seems like difficult and personal reasons, in Rick Bonus, who was also coaching Bishop when Bonus and Bishop were both in Tampa Bay. Nevertheless, just making the analogy there, I don't know what you can do with Carson Wentz. I mean, I even looked up the structure of his new contract. Even if the Eagles traded Wentz, because you got a guy who can't finish a quarter of a postseason game, even if you trade him before June 1, it's $40 million in dead money. $40 million in dead money. Yeah. I'm not suggesting the Eagles will do that. I just understand the frustration of Eagles fans, and I'm a fan of a rival team. That said, I admired the effort of McCown. A great note via ProFootballTalk.com at the end of this first round was that three of the four oldest quarterbacks who have ever played in a postseason played last weekend: Brady, Breeze, and McCown. And McCown gave it everything he had. I'm sure making Eagles fans cringe every time he dove or ran or did anything because their emergency quarterback was wide receiver Greg Ward. From the Seattle standpoint, solid game by their defense, obviously keeping the Eagles out of the end zone, defending Ertz, defending Goddard, not allowing Boston Scott or Miles Sanders to get key gains or big chunks of yardage, keeping pressure on McCown, making sure he never felt truly comfortable back there, albeit Chris Collinsworth even opined during the game, said this guy hasn't taken a rep in over 3 months, and here he is in a playoff game, and ironically for the first time in his career. I don't think Clowney, it was a dirty hit. I know how it looks in slow motion, but I'm not a particular fan of Jadeveon Clowney. I like the football player. I don't like the attitude, but I'm not going to say that was a dirty hit, that he was headhunting. It was unfortunate that it happened. It's just unfortunate for Carson Wentz also, considering his situation overall. Not buying into the beast mode, Travis Homer very little. I mean, the rushing yardage was from Russell Wilson. It seems like Seattle is very one-dimensional. It's very odd for a Seattle Seahawks team that the last couple years has, as much as any other team in the NFL, been a run-based offense. They don't have the personnel to run that. And it was enough to get by a similarly or even more so injury-depleted Philadelphia Eagles unit. The Seattle Seahawks are not a Super Bowl team because of all of their injuries and because of their limitations. It's impressive how far a Super Bowl-winning coach and a Super Bowl-winning quarterback can take you. I just really don't think they can be a Super Bowl contender based on what they have left. I'll offer you another Todd Wright Toddcast on coaching news in the next 24 to 48 hours, and then later in the week, offer a preview of the divisional round of the playoffs. The Todd Wright Toddcast is presented by Pin Chasers. Visit pinchasers.net or follow Pin Chasers on Facebook. Moving into year 61, congratulations, Anthony Peroni, with three locations in the Tampa Bay area. Also, if you are in the Tampa Bay area and ever in need of legal assistance, remember Brandon Legal Group is your full-service law firm servicing the greater Tampa Bay area. You can call them for a free consult anytime at 844-4BLG4ME. 844-4BLG for me, or visit BrandonLegalGroup.com.